Welcome to McKinsey on Building Products, a space dedicated to the in-depth exploration of software product management and engineering. I'm your host, Ricky Singh. Whether you're an experienced product manager, software engineer, or a builder embarking on an exciting journey in this dynamic field, we've got you covered to ensure you remain at the forefront. In this podcast series, you will hear from accomplished product and engineering leaders as they share valuable insights from real-world experience building outstanding products. Visit McKinsey Product Academy to discover more content on our learning platform. In this episode, we have a guest host, Chandra Gyanasambandham, a senior partner at McKinsey, who will be leading today's discussion.
Thanks, Ricky. I'm thrilled to be hosting Polly Butt today. When he left McKinsey, he went to SAP and then had a very, very successful career at Google and is now the chief product officer of Reddit. He's also in the board of New Relic. And by way of asking him to introduce himself, rather than going through a chronology of what you have done in your career, talk about maybe one or two events that people might not know that truly shaped your career.
Chandra, first of all, great to be here. In terms of big events, I'll just call out two, which had a sort of profound impact on me personally and the journey that I took in technology. So first was really seeing the power of technology firsthand. And unlike some of the common origin stories you hear of people having a computer when they were 8 or they were writing like programs and selling software by 10, I didn't get to see my first computer until I was in college. Right? It's a very different experience. Having the opportunity to go to University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign was life-changing for me. So it goes by UIUC. And UIUC, for some of the more younger folks in our audience today, was where like some of the foundational pieces of the internet were built. It was just an extraordinary time where we could see the future of something that was going to change the world, but see a very early view of it in the 90s. That was profoundly impactful. The other bit that was really clicked in my head was seeing just an early version of Reddit, well before I was ever a CPO, right? And this was more than a decade ago. You saw like complete strangers come together and help each other on things. One particular moment I'll just share is Reddit, this thing called Our Place. In Reddit, there are communities that are organized by what are known as subreddits. Think of it as an open canvas, and anyone can go right on that canvas. And because the canvas has millions and millions upon tiles, every user can just go place a single tile on that canvas. The only way you really create something magical is by doing it with your community. Turns out, last year, we had over 10 million users come together and create art. It was just magical. Over a span of like 3 days, you had users place north of 100 million tiles. They like went in and created like everything from like flags to artwork. I mean, it was just amazing to see like people collaborate like that, work with their like communities, but also collaborate with others. And sometimes you saw like friendly competition because last year was also the World Cup. You had a bunch of like folks try to compete with their teams, etc. So seeing the power of technology and the power of people and together, what those can do when you bring technology and people together is really what shaped my own personal journey and continues to inspire me.
Thank you, Polly. So speaking of the power of technology, let's talk about what is the next gen of that today, which is all around generative AI. In Reddit, if we can give one powerful example of a PM that's using either ChatGPT or any one of the foundation models in a very creative way to drive productivity or to do something very differently, and give one engineering example of an engineer or an architect doing something.
I'll give you like a couple of examples. The first one is just our safety team, which is working on just ways to identify spam with homegrown large language model, which help us identify what's spam, what's not spam, what's hateful content, what's not hateful content, etc. We're training our own model, using it in a privacy-sensitive way to drive automation of this process. Yeah. And what that does is, it basically takes a whole bunch of toil of our internal teams and of moderators. So that moderators in Reddit are volunteer moderators Totally. Often are experts in their communities or in their own areas. We want them to spend time on leading those communities and not have to worry about some of the toil that they have to go through.
What would be a good example of that, Pauline?
We just catch dramatically more spam with that and more hateful content. So it's all just auto-flagged. Now, of course, moderators can still go in and say like, yeah, that's not right. But we're catching a lot of stuff that people should never have to look at. Yeah. And automate that completely. So we're taking the grunge work off their hands. So they get spend more time on the community and less time on the stuff.
And are there innovative ways in which your engineers are using it?
Our teams are already trying out like various forms. Usually it takes like two aspects. So one is not necessarily full generation of code. Now think of it more as a coding assistant. We're trying it in a number of our teams. The other thing that we are also doing is looking at use cases like, hey, can it actually help us with better commenting in our code? So that our code base actually just becomes more maintainable over time. Can we actually like generate test cases? And that way you don't have to worry about creating test cases and we just get test coverage for much lower cost than if we had to go write it. And that way engineers spend their time building awesome products and not having to worry about some of the mechanics of what we're doing. So that's, again, it's still in the early days of where it can go. Potential that we see is just enormous in terms of like increasing productivity.
Got it. Very helpful. Maybe we'll change tact a bit. I know that you have talked a fair amount about this notion of helpful products, building really what are helpful products to the community. So I would love to really hear your view on what do you mean by it and how you go about doing it.
Ultimately, it's about focusing on the user because that's what we're all here for. So one of the things I tell my teams often is we all have heard of like, you know, product market fit, all understand that. But there's a pre-product market fit test that you need to be thinking about as you're coming up with like products, right? So first step is really, are you solving a real pain point? Or are you enabling people to do something that they couldn't do previously?
Okay.
And if the answer to this question is no, I see this as like a flashing red light. You have to solve a real pain point or enable people to do something that you just couldn't do previously. Step two is, are you going to do it in a differentiated way? And the reason that that's so important is ultimately there's going to be a sea of options for folks. What is your unique take on this that actually creates some kind of enduring value? And if you're not there, then maybe, you know, this is a yellow light. You know, sometimes you can still like work on things that are undifferentiated, things that might not stand the test of time. Then you have to think hard about like, you know, how much are you going to invest in that? Like, what are you actually like using that for?
Yeah.
Is that just an add-on or is that the core of your product? The core of your product is that, then maybe, you know, think about it, right? I see that as like a flashing yellow light if you answer no to this question. Then the third thing is, can you deliver on these plans with the resources you have? And by resources, I don't just mean people. With the tech you have today, it's easy to talk about like flying cars, but do you have the tech to make that happen in the timeline that you want to make it happen in? And the answer is no. Again, it's a yellow light. I'll give you an example. I worked on building payments into Chrome. This is more than a decade ago at Google. And the problem was simple. Online checkout was hard. The existing solutions were, hey, create an account in like PayPal or do something else, etc. There's too much friction. Or you had to try and like type in like all of your information, so on and so forth. Often there was a ton of mistakes as you're going through it, or you had to fumble. It was just hard. So it was a real pain point that we were solving. It was a check mark on the first step. The second step was really about, can we do it in some kind of differentiated way? And so what we did was use one of the earliest versions of ML at Google to help complete the information in a checkout form. This sounds simple. What's so hard about filling out a credit card number or a phone number? It turns out they're both numbers.
Yeah.
So now how do you know one is a credit card number and the other is a phone number? Because websites around the world are created very, very differently. We did not want to put the burden of the problem on the creators of the website. We just wanted and so we used ML and solving this problem on a very, very early stage. it gets better over time because things start to like work. And then as you get more and more data, you get better and better and better. And it just evolves and becomes dramatically better over time, right? And then the last step was, can we deliver it to the resources and the time we had? And the key there was that we're able to pull it off with a very small but mighty team. It's a collaboration across, you know, the Chrome team and the payments team, et cetera, at Google. We just brought together a very small SWAT team to work on this. Turned out that it was just incredible results. Like in the very first few weeks as we were running experiments internally, we were approaching, you know, 60-70% accuracy. And we're like, okay, that's pretty cool. But we just launched it as a beta. We didn't even announce it as a blog post. But within 6 months, we like crossed like 95% accuracy. It was just amazing. Wow. And the incredible part was on the other side of it, websites were seeing increase in conversion in double-digit percentages, which is just shocking because increase of even a percent is like massive for an e-commerce. And so it was just a win-win across the board. And the last bit I talked about was, you know, you want what you build to ideally have enduring value, right?
Yeah.
So over the next few years, we saw like massive traction. Many teams that came after us built like lots of cool additions onto this, etc. And so it was very heartening to see. But the most interesting part was last week, I was watching the NBA finals. And interestingly enough, right, during one of the games, I saw an ad for payments on Chrome. I was like, wow. I thought enduring. I didn't expect like more than a decade later to see an ad on that feature. It was very cool to see.
Great example. Could you please share with me what I'm going to call a couple of counterintuitive product management hacks that you have learned over your career? It could be a simple technique, something you have done, your teams are doing.
The first one is, there's been a huge emphasis and awareness of the importance of data. It's really shaped how people think, and its impact become very central to how many product teams function. And I share an example from Google. Very fortunate to work on products that have millions and millions of users. Same thing at Reddit. Yep. I remember one of these instances where we were looking at a dashboard and there was barely a blip on the dashboard. And we were looking at what the product quality is for like end users and consumers. So we went into the details of it. Turns out that 0.1% of users were essentially experiencing a degradation of service, you know, what's conventionally called a brownout. Didn't feel like much to the team. But when you actually start thinking about it a little bit more, on a billion user product, a 0.1% degradation is a million users experiencing something that wasn't ideal.
Yeah.
And guess what? Those users talk to their friends and say, hey, you know what? This product isn't that great and it has issues. Their experience of that product is just completely different than what you imagine when you look at mocks. And I'll come to this as well next, but it's very different than what you believe you're delivering and what you even believe you're delivering based on aggregate numbers.
Mm.
So data is an imperfect substitute for users. So truly focus on the users. The second one is, if you talk to an average product team, Chandra, to like say, hey, I've got artifacts like PRDs and BRDs and this. Yeah. Usually too many documents that they can't even link it all to you. It's quite common to see that in product teams. But very rarely, you'll find product teams that actually have product principles. And product principles can actually be extraordinarily powerful for team velocity. And this is very counterintuitive because nobody thinks that having a principle can actually increase velocity because they don't seem obviously connected.
What's an example of a great product principle?
In Reddit, right, we are really committed to democratizing conversations globally. Mm. And one of the things we mean by democratizing conversations is we have a principle where no one on Reddit has a megaphone. That means every comment or post you make on Reddit starts at zero. The users in the community then vote on the comment. Moderators then get to like weigh in on whether this is appropriate for that community or not and satisfies the norms and values of that community. There's an after effect of this. You see much more diverse conversations rise up to the top. And you see the highest quality, most authentic conversations rise up to the top. That's one of the magical things about Reddit. It's not a platform where some users might have a megaphone to push content to 100 million users, regardless of whether of the quality or authenticity of that conversation. It has a huge impact on safety. What this principle does at its core is it gives teams the ability to make decisions in a decentralized way, because they no longer have to bubble up every single thing into a feature or a requirement that we debate. So again, going back to the top, product principles, when they're built in an enduring way, not things that you change every like so often, right? When you build them in an enduring way and you're consistent about them, it actually can drive velocity.
Brilliant. So changing topics about product management techniques to sort of talent and skills looking forward. Again, Gen AI is the right topic of the hour, and it's likely to be one for, because it might be the next computing platform, if you would, right? How should PMs today think about the skill set they need? Are we at a big pivotal moment now? Will there be the next S-curve of sort of PM talent and skill set that they need to go and upskill?
It's a really deep question, Chandra. So let me maybe take a step back and say, oftentimes, whenever like product teams, product managers, product leaders, engineers, etc., whenever they look at some new tech, first question usually that they have in their mind is, hey, how can I apply this to my product?
Yeah, right? That's right.
And what I would say is take a step back and truly spend some time internalizing this tech, because you need to understand what can it do really well and what can't it do. I really encourage everyone to spend some time really understanding what an AI ML pipeline looks like. And unfortunately, not every PM, Chandra, is comfortable today. Mm. And even engineers not comfortable with basic ML concepts, like what does reinforcement learning with human feedback look like? When you have an ML model, like are you focusing on explore or exploit? Yeah. Things like this that you really have to go deep on to really understand how does a probabilistic model work. For those who haven't spent a lot of time in this, it's a different paradigm of how to build software and a different paradigm for how to build products. So this could very well be intimidating, but make the commitment to truly understanding how an AI ML pipeline works.
Yeah.
Once you make that commitment, you understand it, the next step is really figuring out like where in the value chain you sit. So let's look at it both from products and from skills.
Yep.
So on the product side, you could be actually building a portion of the emerging AI stack. So for instance, Reddit's going to offer like prepared and curated data sets for training large language models. Because turns out, Reddit happens to be one of the largest corpuses of moderated, curated content that's available online and conversations that's available online, organized by topic, because it's organized within communities. So it's a very, very powerful set. And this is why many of the LLMs today have been trained on Reddit data. What are the extraordinary other extreme of this, which is you could simply take your existing product and add Gen AI to your product. And the example of this could be, you could simply use an off-the-shelf API to have a conversational interface to your product. And for that, you're really almost operating at the application level as opposed to the stack level. Now, the interesting part is that you have to be thoughtful about the data, because if your data is being ingested by some Gen AI API, there could actually potentially be risks both on the regulatory side or on confidential information leaking. But first thing, understand AI ML pipeline deeply. Second, make sure that you really understand where in the value chain you sit within Gen AI. Are you just leveraging it to add like something onto your product? Or are you actually building a portion of that stack itself? And the answer is different on what you do, why, when, et cetera.
What I really loved about what you said is you saying the foundation is a deeper understanding of it. You are like, without it, you're going to have misconceptions and you'll never get there. Polly, what mistakes have you made in your career, particularly as a chief product officer or just building these products? And what have you really learned from it? And how has it changed you?
I have a laundry list of mistakes longer than any of the accomplishments I have. So that would actually be good training data for any large language model. One of the most interesting things is, and by this time, I'd already, you know, this was in Google, I'd already been responsible for fairly substantial area. We had a pretty bad mistake. And the bad mistake involved a large sum of money because I was working on payments. Mm-hmm. And in payments, Chandra, it's one of those things where everyone cares about the money being accurate to a penny. What I really appreciated about this was, so the question that I got asked when I mentioned to my manager that, hey, this is pretty bad mistake that we just made. And let's just say it was more than a few millions of dollars. But interestingly enough, the only question that my manager had was, did you learn that many millions of dollars from this experience? Because the first question could be like, hey, what went wrong? Tell me what the root cause was. Because whenever there's an issue, the most common thing that teams do is go try to find the root cause.
Yeah. Problem solved.
And the interesting approach that my manager took, and kudos to them for this, is the question was, did you learn from this mistake? Did you learn from the magnitude of this mistake? So the moment you actually pivot your thinking from mistake avoidance to learning, you then treat like all mistakes as just learning opportunities. So long as you don't keep repeating the same mistakes, you're in great shape.
That is a learning.
Always learn. By the way, that's how you should treat mistakes from your team as well and from yourselves. Oftentimes, Chandra, it's easier to learn from your own mistakes than from others.
Yes.
So it's good if you can learn together as a team.
So here's another interesting one. I guess this goes to the point of your first criteria in your pre-product market fit, which is, are you truly solving an unmet need or a pain point or someone or things that they can't do today? How do you navigate spaces like, for instance, this listener has talked about iPhone, where people didn't really express that as a pain point. Where does that fall?
Yeah. In the pre-PMF steps that I talked about, the first step was, are you solving a real pain point or are you enabling people to do something they couldn't do before? The iPhone really falls into the category of people being able to do something they couldn't do before. Absolutely, like, exist those kind of things. Breakthrough innovation exists, and breakthrough innovation sometimes carries the most value in terms of just generating new value. Look, the iPhone is now one of the greatest businesses that's ever been built, right? In a single product business, along with probably like, you know, Google search, etc. So absolutely, breakthrough innovation has its place. You really have to understand, are you doing one of those two things? The second part is, it's actually easy to come up with breakthrough innovation ideas. It's actually much harder to do the last step, which is, can you actually deliver on it?
Yeah.
The magic of the iPhone wasn't that, oh yeah, you could actually use your finger as a pointing device and to navigate through the phone. It was actually executing on it as well. Because sometimes breakthrough innovation is actually in execution as opposed to just in the idea.
So there are a number of brand new product managers, and maybe these are newer graduates who joined from school last year or changed roles and just started in product management. What advice would you have for them?
The first one is, be curious, always be learning. You don't know where learning comes from. Some learning could come from forums like this one, but try to learn from everyone and everything. Do not imagine that only product managers know about products. Guess what? Your sales team has opinions about products. Your engineering team has opinions about products, and they all be valid input for you. The other is, truly focus on the user. Whoever your user is, it's so easy to think you're focusing on the user, but then get caught up in like, hey, I gotta write a PRD or I gotta like have this deadline, etc. And then take shortcuts where you're not really focusing on the user.
So I guess I see a thematic questions about, a lot of PMs feel like they get stuck in mid-management. and what are some ideas for how they could progress?
I'd say the first thing that you start with is impact. If you have a profound impact on your users and on your business, the promotions will come. And guess what? If the promotion doesn't come, then you can go give another company a try. What I've always observed is so long as you go have profound impact, you will actually end up getting like promoted to the highest levels. Lean on others, always be learning and go focus on having impact. And by the way, that impact at that level comes only in the form of a larger team. So you have to not just be a product manager or an engineering manager, you have to be a leader as well. You have to be able to rally people at scale. Because oftentimes people ask me like, hey, I actually shipped my product. Like, how come I didn't get promoted? Well, did you actually move the needle? Right?
Yeah.
For the company and for the users. And if you did, then sure, you'll get recognized for it. And that's a function of being able to just galvanize a large group of folks to work on a real pain point or a breakthrough piece of innovation, and then being able to go deliver on it. So you're creating that enduring value. Just go back to the conversation we had. And if you go truly have that impact, you'll get recognized.
Be curious. It's all about the users. It's all about impact. What a great way to end. Pali, thank you so much. It's been a ton of fun and a real privilege.
Thank you, Chandra. And thank you all for listening in.
As we conclude today's episode, we'd love to hear from you. Please visit us at McKinsey Product Academy website. Don't forget to share and subscribe to our podcast and stay tuned for upcoming episodes. Thank you for listening. Until next time, keep building.